Welcome to Stage Right Radio on HD3 Alt 88 from WAER Syracuse. I'm your host and producer, Stephen Shepard. In the studio, I have two representatives from the Baldwinsville Theater Guild production of The Hunchback of Notre Dame. I have Liam Fitzpatrick and Abel Sear. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Hi.
A lot of people are familiar with the Disney animated film Hunchback of Notre Dame from, I think it was 96, but the original basis for the entire phenomenon was a Victor Hugo novel. Now, where does the stage version fall in between those two works?
Kind of somewhere in the middle. If you're familiar with the Disney movie, there is no goat. I'm sorry. And the gargoyles are Quasimodo's inner thoughts, but also occasionally terrifying creatures.
So less Seinfeld, more Greek chorus?
Very much so.
Yeah.
And they also restored some of the original concepts from the Hugo novel. Kind of. They kept with a lot of what Disney did in combining the character of Grenoir and Captain Phoebus into one, which is Captain Phoebus. Mm-hmm. But they did preserve a little bit more of the darkness that's in the Hugo novel.
So with this darkness, what audience should see the show? Like what age range?
I think we're saying, 12, 13 and up. Parents, be good judges of what your children can handle and want to experience. It is a tragedy in a lot of ways, and it's not the happy Disney ending.
Google it. Read the synopsis. If you're comfortable having the conversation with your child about some of the stuff that happens in the show, then bring them on. But otherwise, leave them at home.
Fair enough.
But you come.
Yes. Abel, you've already music directed so many lofty shows in the Syracuse area alone. Why did you want to not only music direct, but direct this musical?
This is only my fourth time directing something, but the other shows I've directed have all had these really literary, epic kind of stories to them. I directed Evita a few years ago, and that was, of course, about the life of Eva Perón, kind of. And it was really fascinating to get to research her as a character. And then I did Sunday in the Park with George and A Little Night Music. Sunday in the Park is based on a real person. Kind of. And then Night Music comes from a really great Ingmar Bergman film and Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. So getting to do a really classic work of literature on the stage with a beautiful score by Alan Menken and Stephen Schwartz. Liam introduced me to the show when the cast recording came out. I grew up with the movie. I think it was probably one of the last Disney movies I actually saw in the theater. But the score that they've expanded this show into is really gorgeous, and just all of these beautiful sweeping lines and the way that they bring back motifs throughout. It's a really great score and tells a really beautiful story that I think has a lot of bearing in today's world. To the best of our knowledge, it is the Central New York premiere of The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Woo!
The musical.
Liam, you play the title character of The Hunchback, Quasimodo. What has been rewarding about taking on this role?
Really, really, really getting super deep into his psyche. And kind of in a way that I haven't really known how to before. But all that he is just this force of goodness. And then things happen to him. And everything he says is truthful. Everything he says is 100% what's going on with him for real. And just kind of trusting that and letting myself sink into that and just strap in and go. One of the nice parts about the physicality of the show that I have to be hunched over and I'm up on my tiptoes on my right foot and my knees are knocked in and my feet are pigeon-toed. It just kind of always keeps you in the moment because it's like putting something in your shoe to remind you of the character. It's just like, nope, this is who you are right now. So it's just kind of, it's all there and it just keeps you fresh and keeps you in it.
Now, the physicality of the role, are you doing the Daniel Day-Lewis thing and walking like that everywhere?
God, no. I'm not even totally rehearsing like that all the time. Like, if we're just walking through something or running something, I kind of stand up straight and I'm like, this is where I am, guys.
That's honestly for the best. Are you hitting up a physical therapist or chiropractor?
Oh, yeah. I have both. I see the chiropractor twice a week. I see the physical therapist whenever I can, doing a bunch of exercises they gave me, so.
Spinal health is good. Please keep that up. When you're talking about going into the stance of Quasi, I can't help but think of BTG. Just a little over a year ago, they did Elephant Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Alan Stillman portrayed the title character.
Yeah.
He was so into the physicality of that role. I met him 3 times after that, did not recognize him from that performance.
Well, I've known him for years. And I remember seeing him on stage and I was like, I don't know who that person is. This is crazy. So, yeah, I guess BTG is the place where you go if you want to be hunched over, because they did Young Frankenstein a while ago, and Josh Taylor, who's playing Clopin in our show, was Igor, and he had the what humped line.
It's pronounced Igor.
Igor, sorry. Isn't that a joke in the show? I'm sorry.
Igor. Igor sounds kind of like an Apple product.
Yeah.
The recording we're talking about from Paper Mail Playhouse, Michael Arden played Quasi there. Folks at home can listen to him online if you want to hear that. How are you differing yourself from that portrayal, and from the Disney portrayal for that matter?
His take on the role is so specific that if I tried to do the "can see everything from up here," if I tried to do his voice,
yes,
it would just be an impression. It would be like, oh, that's cool. He listened to that a lot and he can, you know, kind of sound like him. Great. Mm-hmm. If I didn't come at it from my own way and just kind of try to find my own voice, it would just be wasting the audience's time, because his is so great and it's so singular to what he does.
The show is kind of a weird animal in that if you watch either the La Jolla production or the Paper Mill production with Michael Arden, when he speaks, he has this raspy voice that Liam just did for you. But when he sings, he has this beautiful soaring tenor. And the point is that when he sings, it's his inner thoughts and he's uninhibited by his physical limitations. The reality, and this is in the play and in the novel, is that Quasimodo is basically deaf as a result of the extremely loud bells which he rings. We also wanted to be sure that we were being very sensitive to not making a caricature out of someone that has a physical limitation of any kind. And one of the other things, and this was sort of my justification, but also just I think it serves better, is that the book describes Quasimodo's speaking voice as a door on a rusty hinge that has not been opened in a very long time. So we took a little bit more that approach, in that his speech is halting because he's not used to speaking to other people, rather than that he can't hear the sound of his own voice. And I think that creates a little less of a disconnect for the audience when he sings these beautiful soaring ballads throughout the course of the show.
Now, I'm kind of glad you're not going just for whatever the full Michael Arden thing was doing, because I did not have the context that Quasi couldn't hear that much when I listened to the full recording. I'm thinking, wow, he got black lung or something.
He just smoked a bag of Marlboros before he came in and did
something. Yeah. Abel, you went very in-depth researching this show in order to bring about your vision, so much so that the two of you went to Paris back in November. When you were in Paris, what was that like?
It was really incredible. Liam and I found that we had to keep reminding ourselves that we were there, because all of these things that we had read about and seen pictures of and, you know, tried to imagine what they were like, we were standing in front of them, we were standing inside them, we were touching them. We made it to our hotel after 30 hours of travel, and got up the next morning, and we're going to the cathedral. We just have to. That needs to be the first real experience.
And we walked down to the Rue de l'Hôpital, which is across the Seine on the northern side. We kept looking for it. We didn't know where the cathedral was. And all of a sudden, I turned to my left and I saw it and just grabbed his arm. And he went, "What?" And I just pointed because I couldn't speak, because just tears were streaming down my face. And it was just like, there it is. And I kept calling her mom the whole time we were there. Like, we would just walk by and be like, "Hey, mom, how's it going?" And there was Notre Dame. And when we looked way down to the right, there was the Eiffel Tower. And it was just kind of like, holy
crap. I can't even imagine. That's got to be so humbling.
Well, and then we walked across the Seine. And as soon as the street opened up to the square in front of Notre Dame, the bells started ringing. And it was
talk about timing.
Yeah, because it was just around 9 o'clock when we got there.
Well, and you know, something that you and I talked about a lot while we were there is we go to see something big and old here, and we don't realize until we're someplace like that how young our country is and how much older all of these glorious things that we read about and have seen are. I mean, the play is set in 1482, but the cathedral was under construction well before that.
It had been finished for
almost 300 years.
But we did get to climb the bell towers, and I totally touched the bell. You weren't supposed to, but I totally did.
Oh, no.
And we stood on top of the bell towers, and we had an incredible tour guide whose name was Centrine Voilette, and she knew so much. She took extra time up on top of the bell towers. You're only supposed to stay for 10 minutes, but the guard came over, and she was like, "Oh, shush, we're fine." We both turned to her, and we said, "Okay, it's 1482. We're up here. What do we see? Like, what's still there?" And she was like, That building was there. None of this was there. That island had goats on it. Everything else was farms." So
she was able to basically completely describe the world that Quasimodo would have seen, or that Victor Hugo imagined writing about. Because Hugo is an odd author. This is now the second of his musicalized novels that I've done.
In France.
In France. We did Les Mis. Aw, that was cute. at BTG
four years ago.
And Liam played Marius, and I music directed that show. You know, so I've gotten a little bit used to Hugo's voice.
It's a lot of words.
It's a lot of words, but they are really great. But he viewed himself more as a historian than he did an author or a playwright. He felt a deep need to tell the history of his country and his people and what they had gone through. His novel was actually responsible for a complete restoration of the cathedral. The cathedral had fallen into great disrepair by the mid-19th century.
Wasn't that the reason he wrote the novel in the first place?
Yeah, that
like, it didn't come just by chance. He intended for that to be the effect.
He wanted an awakening.
Baron Duluc, wasn't it, that came to him and basically commissioned him to write a pamphlet about Notre Dame. Hey,
if that was supposed to be a pamphlet,
well,
he doesn't know how to summarize.
Considering the length of some of his other works, that may be considered
a pamphlet. It's
really?
Well, they call Les Mis the brick, and it's about twice as thick as Notre Dame.
Oh, wow.
But yet, and then he just kept writing because there were no stained glass windows. All of the statues had been stripped or beheaded during the Revolution. The cathedral was being sold off for scrap, essentially. It would not exist today if Hugo had not written the novel. So now it's beautifully, perfectly restored. And we saw the one statue of Mary that survived from the original. She's 800 years old, and you cannot see any of the features of her face anymore. The baby Jesus in her arms is like just a nub of stone.
Now, what are a couple things about the Notre Dame Cathedral that people might not expect, besides Mary with the nub of Jesus?
The Jesus nub. Honestly, in all its grandeur and with the bells ringing and with all the crying and, oh my God, we're here, I turned to him and I went, really? That's it? That's the whole thing? Because, I mean, not that it's not massive because it's 33 stories high, but I expected it to be four times the size because, you know, the Disney movie makes it look
gigantic.
And not that it's not gigantic. I just expected, like, American gigantic, not like sensible French 15th century
gigantic.
Well,
and while we were in Paris, we visited a lot of churches, because that's kind of what we do, you know, since
we
Liam.
Have a rule whenever we go anywhere, if there's a church, we have to go in and look at it, because we both work in churches.
Though we did get church fatigue while we were there.
Oh my God, so many churches.
But
makes sense.
We went to Saint-Sulpice, which is over on the other side of the Seine, mm-hmm. and the architecture is drastically different for that church, but it seemed almost as though you could fit Notre Dame inside the nave of that church because of just the scope of it. So Notre Dame is a bit less imposing of a building, is how I would say it, than I expected it to be.
And I mean, when it was originally built, when it was finished in the 14th century, it was the biggest structure in France. And, you know, there were two-story houses around it for maybe a mile on the Ile de la Cité, which was the original Paris, which is a city in the, or a tiny island in the middle of the Seine. St. John the Divine in New York is one of our favorite churches. Mm-hmm. And when we took a tour of that, he said, you could fit Notre Dame Cathedral inside this church right here.
Speaking of New York, it makes me wonder, the fact that you think Notre Dame is smaller than you expect. I had a similar experience when I was in New York City when I finally saw the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree and the ice rink. I thought they were going to be so much huger than they were.
You thought the tree was going to be as tall as the rock.
Exactly, but not at all. I love where this talk is going. We'll get right back into it. But first, we have to take a very quick break. Liam, tell the people where they can find more information about Hunchback of Notre Dame.
If you go to BaldwinsvilleTheaterGuild.org, it's theater with an R-E, or to Baldwinsville Theater Guild's Facebook page, you can get more information on the show, which runs January 26th through February 10th.
We'll be right back on Stage Right Radio on HD3 Alt-88 from WAER Syracuse. Keep it right here.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele. Now that the kids have their own car, what do you do with the training wheels? If you have an unused vehicle, donate it to us. We'll pick it up, turn it into more great public radio, and you might qualify for a tax deduction. Here's how.
Find out more by visiting our website, waer.org.
We're back on Stage Right Radio on HD3 Alt 88 from WAER Syracuse. I'm Stephen Shepard. In the studio, we have Liam Fitzpatrick and Abel Sear from Hunchback of Notre Dame at Baldwinsville Theater Guild. I know from a little birdie that the Paris trip wasn't all theater and church business. There was definitely pleasure involved, including something particularly special near the end. Instead of looking at me like you're going to smite me, would either of you like to share a little about that? It's too sweet not to share, especially when linked to this production.
Back in May, for St. David's Celebration of the Arts, we did a production of Stephen Sondheim's Sunday in the Park with George, which is based loosely on the life of Georges Seurat and his painting. Liam, say the name of the painting.
Un dimanche après-midi sur L'Île de Grand Jatte. It's a Sunday afternoon on the island of the Grand Jatte. It's
the Zuntide.
Right.
There's a glimpse into how I got around Paris. Liam, will you say the words to this human so that we can have something to
eat? Then I would say it incorrectly, and they would look at me and just say, quoi? And then I would say it in English, and they'd go, oh, yeah, over there.
We did that show, and Liam played Georges. One of the things we wanted to do when we decided that we were going to go to Paris was to go to Le Grand Jatte and see the spot where the painting was painted. We left our hotel, which we managed to get lost from every day. We have this theory that the monuments in Paris all sink back into the ground at night and then pop up someplace else because we kept ending up at
the Bastille.
The Bastille, Place de Vosges. So we were walking. We thought to go to Place de République to get a cab.
Yep.
And then we got there and couldn't get a cab. Mm-hmm. And so we just decided to walk a little bit further. And Liam had done a lot of research on the trip before we went, looked up some important places in the life of Seurat, at the off chance that we would have time to see any of them.
And we got them all.
We were walking and came out on a street, and we were on the Rue de la Magenta, which is where Seurat died.
Yep, it was his childhood home and where he actually died.
I said, okay, fine. We can look for the stupid building, but we need to get a cab. I was getting frustrated. We had a lot of things to do. It was our last day there. It wasn't until we found the building that we were then able to get a cab that would take us to Le Grand Jatte. So we took the cab, half an hour from the city, which is a lyric from the show. Mm-hmm. And then I said, okay, well, let's walk to the end of the island. And at the end of the island, we saw a boat. And in the show, there's a character, the boatman, and he actually is very prominent in the painting in the left-hand corner. He's one of the, I think biggest.
Next to the woman with the parasol. Next biggest person.
And on the back of the boat, it said Powell. Well, our boatman in our production was Derek Powell. He's also in Hunchback. Yes. With his brother and his other brother. So I said, well, that's weird. Let's go. So we walked to, randomly in the middle, there's a little bee garden and all these flowers that bees would enjoy. And then Liam turned to me and asked if I would marry him. First I said, what? And then he asked me again, and then I said, maybe.
And I said, what do I have to do to get a yes?
And I said, you'll know.
Which is very able.
Well, I said, what do we do now? And he said, we watch the people strolling through the trees. But then we turned and we watched the painting walking by us. There are these two characters called the Celestes in the show, and these twins in matching tracksuits ran by us.
There were so many moments where we kept thinking there was a stage manager in a booth somewhere going like, cue the lady with parasol. All right, it's France. Okay, cue
you sure there wasn't?
I don't know. It might have been Hugo. It might have been Seurat.
You kept getting lost before. What if that was just the stage manager moving the set around?
It could have been.
It was the surrealist, weirdest thing. But so then that was like the ninth time both of us had just lost it and just broken down in convulsive sobs that day on that island. And so it was like the entire painting and everyone from the show, every character in the show had literally like just tapped us on the shoulder and been like, hello. And that's what happens in Act 2 of Sunday in the Park with George. He didn't say yes for 14 hours.
Yeah, I really made him wait.
Why 14? If you're going to make him wait that long, why that number?
There were a couple of things that I experienced when we were at Mass at Notre Dame where I did the thing that you do sometimes when you make a deal with God and you say, okay, if this seemingly random thing happens, then I guess I know what I'm supposed to do. And earlier in the week, Liam had mentioned putting a lock on the Pont Neuf. Which is a bridge where you put locks and then you throw the keys.
You are locking your love. You put a lock on the actual metal part of the bridge and then you throw the keys into the Seine so that no one can ever take it off.
I saw that in the movie Now You See Me.
Yeah.
He hadn't mentioned it again. It was our last night there. Suddenly it came up. But the condition that I had put on it was that we have to successfully procure a lock and put said lock on said bridge. And if that doesn't happen, I think this is a no-go. We managed to find a grocery store that was open. And so we found a lock and went and did the thing. Then I think I said, I think yes, if that's better than maybe.
He said, I think my answer is I think yes.
And then we talked a little bit more and talked about what this was. And
then I told him everyone in the States that knew it was happening and was eagerly waiting a text or a phone call from me saying yes or no.
So, yes, I said yes, and we got engaged in Paris.
It was pretty great.
That was the longest answer possible to that question, I'm sure.
Editing this is going to be just wonderful for me later.
Good for you.
All right, we will be right back on Stage Right Radio on HD3 Alt 88 from WAER Syracuse. We're going to have a song from Liam and Abel in the studio. Keep it locked right here.
When your business becomes a sponsor on WAER, not only will you be contributing to the success of a valued community service, you'll be reaching tens of thousands of educated, involved listeners with your message each week in an uncluttered atmosphere. Become a WAER business sponsor by calling Jennifer Weeks Oseda at 443-5254 today.
Welcome back to Stage Right Radio on HD3 Alt 88 from WAER Syracuse. We have in the studio Liam Fitzpatrick and Abel Searer from Baldwinsville Theater Guild's Hunchback of Notre Dame. So, Liam, could you give us a little setup of the song you're about to sing?
Yeah, this is the first song that Quasimodo sings in the show, and it kind of lets the audience in on the fact that he doesn't want to just stay in the tower and ring the bells anymore. He wants to go out and be among the people.
All right, this is from Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Safe behind these windows and these parapets of stone, gazing at the people down below me. All my life I watch them as I hide up here alone, hungry for the histories they show me. All my life I've memorized their faces, knowing them as they will never know me. All my life I wonder how it feels to pass a day not above them, but part of them. And out there living in the sun, give me one day out there. All I ask is one to hold forever out there, where they all live on, where what I'd give, what I'd dare, just to live one day out there. Among the millers and the weavers and their wives, through the roofs and gables I can see them. Every day they shout and scold and go about their lives, heedless of the gift it is to be them. If I were in their skin, I'd treasure every instant out there, strolling by the Seine. Taste a morning out there like ordinary men who freely walk about there. Just one day, and then I swear I'll be content with my share. Won't resent, won't despair, old and bent, I won't care, I'll have spent one day out there.
Wonderful job, Liam and Abel.
Thanks.
So, Hunchback of Notre Dame at Baldwinsville Theater Guild. Who else is in this production?
Well, we have playing the villain, sort of, I guess.
Let's call him the antagonist just because the protagonist is obviously the Hunchback.
That sounds good to me. We have Bob Brown, who I'm sure is no stranger to most theater-going audiences.
Or radio listening audiences.
Or radio Definitely. Listening audiences. Playing the role of Dom Claude Frollo. Sierra Windhausen is playing Esmeralda. Paul Thompson is playing the role of Captain Phoebus. And Josh Taylor is playing Clopin, the King of the Gypsies.
Josh told me in person that he loves the role of Clopin because it basically combines Thénardier from Les Mis and St. Jimmy from American Idiot.
Yeah.
That's pretty fair. Perhaps with a little bit more heart in the end.
Yeah.
I hope so.
But the physicality, it's something that Josh is very at home playing, which, oddly enough, Bob Brown is not used to playing the villain.
He's used to playing Jesus.
He's used to playing Jesus. We've all seen him as Tevye and as Don Quixote.
Captain Von Trapp.
Yeah, you know, all of these leading male roles that are good at heart, and to see him really get to play at being kind of awful human being.
But still thinks he's good at heart, though.
Still thinks he's good, yeah. But he's doing really great things and really has made it his own.
Hunchback also features the likes of Derek Powell, Taylor Peck, yours truly, mm-hmm. Christina Abbott, Corey Hopkins, and many, many more. This show even has a full-fledged choir separate from the ensemble, is that right?
Yes. There's so much music that just the ensemble cannot sing it alone, so we need a choir to sing it while the ensemble is having things thrown at them and flying up into the air on a 6-foot set, throwing people and catching people and lifting people. So we have a choir of, I think, 16 seated at either side of the 14 piece orchestra for the show. So I think our stage manager, who we could not do this without, Lizzie Ehlers, counted one day and said to me, do you realize you have 60 people showing up every night just to do the show?
And the orchestra for the show is the top-notch players in town. They're all incredibly dear friends and also sensational musicians.
So it takes an army.
It does.
Yes.
Besides Out There, because you just sang it for us, what is one of your favorite songs in the show?
The things that really are what drew me to the show are the big moments when it's full cast on stage with the choir, with the orchestra, just really going at it. The finale of Act One is probably one of the most impressive pieces of choral and ensemble writing for a show that I've done in a while. Just the way that it's back and forth, just getting to see the point of view of so many different characters and seeing what this is doing to the city and to the world and where it leaves the audience at the end of Act One, I think it's a spectacular piece.
Lastly, what is one of your favorite themes in the show? There are a lot of different themes. The one that comes to mind for me always is what makes a monster and what makes a man.
That's a pretty spectacular one because at the end of the show, I am playing the person that everyone thinks is a monster. But at the beginning of the show, we say he's just a man. But by the end, I have, you know, thrown wooden beams and giant rocks down at people below the cathedral and, like, melted people, essentially, with molten lead. I have, in essence, kind of become the monster everyone says that I am. And Frollo, throughout the show, talks about how he's succumbing to his just human tendencies. So, and everyone thinks he's the monster, but he kind of becomes more of a man in the show. I mean, we both do terrible things. I'm not saying that, like, Frollo's actually okay. Every single one of us has the capacity to become a monster or a man. And, I mean, not man in the gender sense, man in just the human sense. Yeah.
The idea of the ballad that Esmeralda sings, God Help the Outcasts, is probably another theme that is more in the show than perhaps at first viewing or listening or thinking about it. Is actually pervasive because Kwasi is obviously an outcast because of his physical appearance, but Esmeralda is an outcast because she is a gypsy, she has no home. Phoebus is an outcast because he is a soldier that rejects the order that is given to him and he now has nothing. Clopin is an outcast because even though he's the king of the gypsies, once their hiding place is discovered, they have to move. Frollo is an outcast because of his education and position with the church that keeps him from having what he wants, which on some level is to be just a regular human. It's just kind of a commentary on what we as a society do to people when we decide who they are for ourselves, how we view them and how we treat them based on who we think they are and what that can do to a person.
We put them as the extreme position when really most often they're always like somewhere in the middle, some gray area.
Right.
All right, let us know one more time where they can find more information about Hunchback.
You can find more information on BaldwinsvilleTheaterGuild.org. It's theater R-E, or on the Baldwinsville Theater Guild Facebook page.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Stage Right Radio on HD3 Alt 88 from WAER Syracuse.